So some questions this morning. Where is God when we disobey? Where is God when my family is breaking apart? Where is God in the silence? Can I trust that He is good? Can I trust that He cares for me? Have you asked one of those questions before? Have you asked one of those questions lately? I mean, these are the hard questions that come when the reality of life in a world that is beset by sin comes upon us. Sometimes, even those who have been Christians for a long time, they know the right words to say in those moments. They can say, "Yes, I am trusting God in this hard time." But the reality is often that we are micromanaging our situations. We are grasping for control. We're doing whatever we can to handle the situation ourselves. Our passage today is full of human sin. It's full of attempts to manage things by human means. It's full of attempts to fulfill God's promises by human power. But in the midst of all of that, we are still going to see a loving and a gracious God who is slow to anger and abounding in love. And so I want us to consider there's two realities that are before us as we're looking at these. There's kind of two parts to this story. The first reality that we'll look at is this, that God calls us to be patient as we trust in Him and in His good plan. And then the second reality is this. Part of God's good plan is to be patient and gracious towards us. So as we look at the passage, I think it's helpful to remember where you've just been and then where you're going. So where you've just been in chapter 15 and then where you're going to be next week, I presume, in chapter 17. In chapter 15, God has made this covenant with Abraham that you would have talked about. That in this covenant ceremony, it's full of symbols and rituals and sacrifice. But the core of that covenant is this one idea that God is going to give Abraham an heir. He's going to give him a son, and then all these other blessings, the nations, the land in which they're able to live, all those other blessings kind of hinge on that one promise. That he will have a descendant. He will have an heir. So then skip forward. So chapter 17 comes, and in chapter 17, God is going to reconfirm that promise to Abraham. Not Abraham yet. He's going to reconfirm that promise to Abram, and he's going to give him the sign that's going to continue on into the future, the sign of circumcision that says, "This, we are a part of God's promises." That this is the physical sign of a reality of who God is and how He is dealing with us for future generations as well. And the question today is, well, what happens in that in-between time between chapter 15 and chapter 17 here today and chapter 16? And the first part of that answer is about 15 years. About 15 years. Abram was already an old man when he's given this promise of an heir. Sarah was already an old woman when they were given that promise. And yet, time continues to pass after that promise is given, and still that heir, that son, has not come along. I mean, can you imagine that kind of wait? I think often we feel as if, you know, like a week goes by and we feel like maybe God is not close to us if we haven't really felt his direction or his guidance in that span of a few days. I mean, can you relate to that? Relate to that feeling of God feeling far off? I think most of us probably can. So, considering that, it shouldn't come as a surprise to us when Abram and Sarai also display the same kind of impatience that we often do, and they seek to take matters into their own hands. And the choices that are made by Abram and Sarai towards God and towards Hagar have significant and long-reaching consequences. So what happens in our story? Having not heard from God in some time, other than the promise that He had made, they say, well, maybe we need to go about this a different way. And so Sarai gives to Abram her slave and says, you can use her as sort of a surrogate to maybe have an heir through her. Culturally speaking, this was not an uncommon thing for them to be doing. I think really this story is not interested in discussing the sexual morality of what happened as much as that is to show us what is happening. It's showing us the problems of what such actions represent. That is, a lack of trust in God to fulfill His promises. After it is certain that Hagar has successfully conceived, people are able to see that, everyone seems to start to realize that maybe this wasn't the right way to go about things. I think it can be helpful for us to recognize that there's somewhat of a parallel here to another story that you'll be familiar with because of this series. There's really a parallel with the story of Adam and Eve. So in the creation story, Adam and Eve are what? They're given a command to not do something, to not eat the fruit of the tree of good and evil, the knowledge of good and evil, and they're called to obey that command. Abraham and Sarah, it's a little bit different, but they're also given something, but they're given a promise. They're given a promise of an heir, a promise of a son. Both of these couples, though, after a time, a lack of trust develops, and they seek to become self-sufficient. So Adam and Eve say, we don't need to necessarily depend upon God for the knowledge of good and evil if we simply eat of the tree. Abraham and Sarai say, we don't necessarily have to depend on God fulfilling His promise through us if we can have an heir through this slave, this servant. The parallels continue, though. So Adam and Eve, what happens? They, because of their actions, they feel ashamed. They seek to shift the blame onto other people. And Adam then shirks his responsibility. In the end, they lose their home in the Garden of Eden as they're sent out from it. In our passage today, Sarai is the one who feels shame. She feels shamed by Hagar. She seeks to shift the blame back onto Abraham, saying, God will judge between you and me because I gave you my servant, and look what's happened as a result of that. And Abraham is the one who then shirks his responsibility. His response to her is, she's your servant, do whatever you want with her. Hagar is the one who's dealt with harshly, and she's the one who loses her home as a result. So you can look at this story and we can say, well, here we are again. God has initiated again with Abram, spoken to him directly, given him his promises, and once again, the human response has been to pursue a human means despite those promises and direction from God. So I was trying to think, like, what does this look like in kind of our day to day? Do we have anything that might be comparable to understanding this? So thinking about, you know, when you're driving with your partner or your friend, or I don't know, even like a taxi driver, an Uber driver, it usually doesn't take too much for us to start offering our own advice, our own kind of guidance on, especially if they're driving a bit erratically. My wife and I just started learning how to drive. We're from America. We're not used to driving on the left side of the road. So when we drive together, there's lots of this, as you can imagine. There's lots of this, like, whoa, 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 slow down. Watch it. You're going too far. You're going too far to the side. Some of that kind of stuff. I mean, why do we do that? Well, in part, we feel like, you know, if I were in the driver's seat, I could probably do at least as good a job, if not better. I kind of have a general understanding maybe of how to drive a vehicle. So we feel like we can kind of offer our opinion. But what about flying a plane? Is anyone in here a pilot? Thank goodness. And then this analogy will work out. All right. So what about flying in a plane? I mean, who in here is going to enter into the plane, and you're going to, you know, in the middle of the flight, kind of walk up to the cockpit, the flight deck, and you knock on the door, and you say, listen, I heard over the intercom that we're flying at 30,000 feet, and I really think you ought to ratchet it up to maybe 33,000 feet. I think that might be better. I mean, why? Why don't we say things like that? Because as far as I know, like, none of us have the knowledge to really be able to offer advice in a situation like that. I mean, even when our flights are awful or the weather's bad and we have to circle for hours around an airport or the flight's really bumpy on the way down because of what's going on, even in that case, we might feel a little bit grumpy because our flight has been delayed or we're not able to land yet. We might feel a little bit scared, but we're not throwing open the exit door and jumping out. Why? Because in those circumstances, we still trust the pilot as the best means to get us to the ground safely. We're not taking that into our own hands. And yet, for some reason, when it comes to the one who orders and who structures the universe, including our own lives, we're so quick to abandon God's promises and his direction when we are faced with times of difficulty. We really, in a sense, throw open the exit door and we jump and we just kind of yell, "I think I'll go my own way," as we go down. In some ways, looking at our text today and looking at text after text after text in the Bible, we're in good company. Over and over again, we have the story of it's a new prophet, a new patriarch, the next king, and time after time, they can't do it. They often either fail in the process of trying to carry out God's promises, or as is often the case, they just seek their own way from the start. They don't even try. So as we recount this reality that's in the Old Testament, in the New Testament, and in our own lives, this brings us to the second reality that's found in our passage, that it really is a part of God's plan to be gracious and patient with us. So as we move through the story, you hit a point where the story slows down a bit. You'll see this a lot when you're reading the Old Testament. The first six verses in the passage, it's kind of like we're just moving through the story here. Then you can kind of tell in the language that's used, it's "and this happened, and this happened, and this happened, and she said this, and he did this." And you're just kind of like clipping along in the story. You're moving through a long period of time. And then all of a sudden, everything just kind of slows down into real time. And that's where Hagar is now off. She's run away, and she's met out there by the angel of the Lord. So this is the Egyptian slave of Sarai, the mistress now of Abram, and God comes and he speaks to her. I mean, do you realize how incredible that must have been for her? It might seem natural for God to speak with Abram, right? He's the chosen patriarch, the ancestor of God's people, but to come to a slave girl. I mean, I think she would have found it amazing either way, but it's doubly so when we realize that God speaks to her not in judgment, but speaks to her a blessing. So she's told to return to Sarai. She's told to return to her mistress who has just mistreated her. But she does so. She goes back with a promise from God, a promise that's very similar to the one that's been given to Abraham, that her offspring will multiply, and that her son, though not without trouble, will be strong. Hagar has truly been granted an incredible honor, which she neither earned nor expected, but it's a gift from God, as he's described, the one who has listened to her afflictions. That's the name of Ishmael, the God who listens. And this leads us to something completely fascinating in this passage. Out of all the people that we have encountered in Genesis so far, Hagar is the first person to give a name to God. This is going to happen often and many more times throughout the Old Testament as people give names to God, as they encounter him in different situations. You have someone who would say, in the Bible, often it's usually just translated out, "God, the one who delivers me from my circumstances." But if you're reading it in the original, this is just like a name, a long Hebrew name that's been given to God. But here is our first instance of that. The first person to name God in the Bible is the Egyptian slave of Abram. And what's the name that she gives him? The God who sees. The God who sees me. And it sort of seems to have a double meaning in that she has encountered him and he has seen her. We've got both sides of that kind of incorporated into this. This mother is able then to give God a name. Her son has been named God Listens. And she takes it almost a step further and says, you're not just the God who listens, you're the God who sees. God has not abandoned this woman and this child who've gotten the bad deal in Abram and Sarai's attempt to take matters into their own hands. Instead, he has promised to bless and sustain them. And I think this is the intentional contrast of this passage. The first section involves Abram and Sarai, at least they're asking these questions, if not out loud, through their actions. Where is God? Does he not see that we are too old now to have children? Does he not hear our pleas to give us a son? Will he speak to us again? The answer is given, but the answer is given through God's interaction with Hagar. This is the God who speaks, who hears, and who listens. So in the coming weeks, as you continue through Genesis, you're going to hear how God keeps his promises. Abraham and Sarah are given their promised son in Isaac. Hagar and Ishmael, although they are eventually sent away after Isaac's birth, God continues to care for them as promised. Ishmael, Isaac, they are now the new bearers of the promises of God, and guess what? They do not fully follow the instructions of God, nor do they fully trust in his promise. Just like all who came before and all who will come after, it's all the same. We do not fully trust in the promises of God. We do not fully follow his commands. All that is except one. There is one descendant of Abraham who fully followed the Father's commands and instructions and who fully trusted in his promises, and that is the person of Jesus, the Son of God, the Messiah. God's plan was to be patient through the many years of people placing their trust in other places, placing their trust in the promises of human kings, of prophets, of priests, in man-made gods, so that as the Bible says, and this is from Galatians, but when the fullness of time had come, this is a part of God's long-reaching plan, when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, so that we might receive adoption as sons. And because you are sons, God has sent the Spirit of his Son into our hearts, crying, Abba, Father. So listen to this last line. So you are no longer a slave, but a son. And if a son, then an heir through God. You hear the echoes of this story that we're looking at today, echoing all the way into the New Testament as Paul writes in Galatians. You are no longer a slave, but a son. And if a son, then an heir through God. God sends his son. He came to redeem all who sin. That's all of us. He came to redeem all who lack faith. That's all of us. He came to redeem all who fail under God's law. That's all of us. He came to redeem all who struggle to trust his promises. That's all of us. That's everyone here today. And having done so, Jesus brings and gives us promises of his own. And these are promises that are particularly for people with the problems that we have talked about today. And who is that? It's all of us. This tendency to question whether or not God is really in control, and the desire to start to take matters into our own hands and seek our own solutions, Jesus speaks to people like that, people like us. He says things like this: come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Matthew 11. He says things like this: and surely I am with you always, to the very end of the age. Matthew 28. or this. He says, and if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you may also be where I am. John 14. And lastly, he says, I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you. Again from John 14. God is not silent. He's speaking to you through his word today. He's speaking to you through his word every day as we go to him in it. And he gives us these promises. These promises that he gives, these are rocks that you can cling to, even if it feels like God is otherwise silent in your life. Grab hold of those promises. Grab hold of those promises and don't let go. Or if I can just relate it back to our analogy from earlier, none of us, if we're all on the plane. We are all on the plane, and none of us have any experience holding the universe together and directing the course of history. So rather than throwing open that door and jumping out, trust this pilot with your life. And that's an encouragement to those who are already following Christ today to continue to trust this pilot with your life, to continue to go and return to those promises of Jesus over and over again. And if you are not following Jesus today, that is again an encouragement to trust this pilot. You're on the plane. You're on the plane with everybody else. This is kind of where you have to make your choice. Are you going to go your own way and risk it outside? Or are you going to trust the pilot to bring you in safely? If you want to know how to do that, please talk to me. Please talk to anyone else who's here this morning. Your neighbor can probably explain it even better than I can as you hear how they have trusted the pilot with their lives. Let's pray. Father, every day is a battle, where we battle for control. We desire to do things our own way, and we find it hard to trust that you are at work for our good and for your glory. Would you work in us through your Spirit that we might see what you are doing? But even if we can't see the end result, even if we can't know the why to all of our questions, that we would be able to trust, to know that you are good, to know that you are working your purposes out in this world. Give us hearts of faith in that. Faith that is fully dependent upon Jesus, the only one who could have fulfilled the promises and kept your commands. We rest it all in him because we cannot do it in our own strength. I pray this in his name.